scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies, the continuing saga of two men on their quest for film knowledge and
food. Wow, you make this way more... Well, the food thing's true, but...
Totally true.
Did you hear me gasp? I gasped.
I
was shocked.
I have no idea what that was for.
I was shocked at your return to this magical studio in the sky.
Oh, it's been like 2 weeks, man.
Yeah, well, it's actually been like, in the last like 2 months, you've been here like once.
Oh, well, fair enough.
Well, you know, you
I
had,
really
had
know
things
what to
going
say
on in my life. I had movies not to see.
I saw a lot of movies actually in the last week, none of which come out this, actually, nope, still none of which come out this week. But I was at Fantastic Fest last week.
Was it fantastic?
It was quite fantastic. I got to see the owner of the Alamo Drafthouse wear a pink mohawk and get his face punched by Michelle Rodriguez.
Wow.
To say the least, that was interesting.
Usually you got to pay an extra $50 for that.
Yeah, usually the face punch costs you extra. But yeah, it was a fun time, and I'm glad that I did it. And the if you read Film School Rejects, the old website that I write for, we've got some pretty awesome coverage up. So
You had a lot of coverage.
Tons of coverage. Still more to come, actually. By the time this particular show airs, we'll be almost to about 60 reviews, which is quite a few films from Fantastic Fest.
That's like 120 hours. That's like 4 working weeks.
It might actually be something near that, yes.
Yeah.
Cool. So this is not about Fantastic Fest, though. This is about this week's movies. And we've got a few of those to talk about. Before we get to that, though, here's how you can get a hold of us. Go to fatguysatthemovies.com. You can jump on iTunes and search the iTunes store for Fat Guys at the Movies, and we will show up. You can download us, subscribe to us, download us to your portable devices.
iPods, people. Don't get your mind out of the gutter.
I like to download Fat Guys at the Movies to my freshly unwrapped iPad. It's pretty cool.
I know.
Also rate us. Give us that 5-star rating if you want. If you don't want, just give us the 5-star rating anyway, because that'd be awesome.
We promise all you people in other countries, we will eventually read those reviews in like
not
Italian.
Really. You can go to fatguysatfilmschoolrejects.com if you would like to email us, or you can leave us a voicemail. Area code 740-205-6456. That is the new phone number. That goes directly to Kevin, because we've determined that the one that goes directly to me is not a good idea. It's not good.
Not a good idea. Word to work. Sometimes I don't have access to that for a couple of weeks.
Sometimes people just don't check that at all.
That's very true. That happens.
So there's that.
Yeah.
But
you want to roll in? Should we just start rolling with the reviews? We got 4 movies we're talking about.
Yeah, we've got
today.
4 movies to talk about. The first one is a bit of a scary movie. It's called My Soul to Take. It is in 3 dimensions, in which Wes Craven returns to teen horror with his 3D thriller about a kid who thinks he's the reincarnation of a serial killer.
My name is Adam Hellerman, but everyone calls me Bug. I live in Riverton, Massachusetts, a small town notable for fishing, tourism, and the Riverton Ripper.
The Ripper was killed 16 years ago today, the very night that 7 of us here were born. Some say we share more than just a birthday.
They found Jay Chan in the river this morning. He's dead. Pray for our souls, Bug. He's coming.
Hello?
They didn't show this to us. Preemptive suck.
Oh, there you go.
That's
I saw a trailer
review
for this today for the first time. Not only have I not been seeing movies, I've not been paying attention to any of the movies coming out. So, however, I did see a quick TV spot for this, and it looked awful. So
it looks like your standard, like sort of like 80s teen sort of Wes Craven slasher. The only thing is, as much as, and you know me, I'm a huge proponent of 3D. It doesn't look like it's gonna be great 3D from the trailer. Whereas, like, you saw the Resident Evil trailer, and you're like, that's gonna be some awesome 3D. This one, a guy puts a knife in the camera, and that's about it from the trailer.
I always hate it when they do that.
We shall see.
Okay.
Should we move on to the next one?
I guess so.
All right. Well, that gets a preemptive suck, which is one about a serial killer, and this is about an actress killing her career. Life as We Know It, Katherine Heigl and Josh Duhamel play a couple who hate each other, but they score a child when their best friends are killed in a car crash.
Wow.
Yes, this is she.
Did Allison and Peter speak with you about who would take care of Sophie in the unlikely event that they should both die?
No.
Well, they named you.
I'm sorry. They picked us together.
Believe me, I tried to advise them against it.
Are we supposed to live in this house together?
We are part of a plan.
Some chick says, oh, miss, you can forget the condom.
Are you okay?
And I say no, and I still end up with the kid.
What? Sweetie, you have poo on your face.
Here's an interesting thing about it. The best friends in this movie are played by some other guy and Christina Hendricks from Mad Men.
All right.
Which is just completely unbelievable that she died in a car crash because she has her own airbags.
Oh, she's the one that dies in the car crash?
Yes.
That's really sad.
And you almost don't
hate this movie.
Well, you know, I almost didn't recognize her as Christina Hendricks because she was like totally covered. I mean, not that she was in a bikini, but she had like sweaters on through everything. And I'm kind of like, oh, wait, she's the big boob girl from, what do you call it? Mad Men.
From Mad Men, yeah.
The rest of the movie.
She's quite attractive.
She is attractive. And you know who else is attractive is Katherine Heigl and Josh Duhamel. Both are very attractive people.
Fair enough.
This movie, not so much.
Yeah, Josh Duhamel's cute.
He's cute. Here's the thing. I mean, it hits... The biggest problem with this movie is it's trying to be this lighthearted, wispy romance, rom-com kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it deals with their best friends getting killed and orphaning their daughter. So, I mean, it really has this sort of oil and water feel to it where it's like got this really heavy subject matter. And then it's like, oh, and I got poop on my face from the baby, you know, that kind of stuff. So
okay. you didn't find it to be an accurate portrayal of the ups and downs of human life.
Well, I have three kids. So as a parent, you do watch this thing and go, well, that's just stupid. What are you, an idiot?
Some of life is tragic and some of life is fun though.
Yeah, it is. But it just doesn't work. I mean, some people... But you know what? I went to the screening. There was like half the theater. It was at the Arena Grand in Columbus, and half the theater was filled. And you would have thought... Usually, free screenings, people come out to the movie, but nobody came out to this movie. So.
It was the homeless guy there? Because there's a homeless guy that goes to all the screenings in Columbus.
He does? I know there's the one
Chester.
Guy... Yeah, Chester. Yeah, oh, no. He usually goes to the ones at the Lennox.
Oh, fair enough. He didn't want to walk all the way downtown.
Yeah, it's a bit of a haul.
I tell you. Lazy homeless
chilly.
People.
A little bit chilly that night. But no, I like Josh Duhamel. I think he's a good actor. And Katherine Heigl's okay. But again, like every other movie she was in, like the Ugly Truth and 27 Dresses and even Knocked Up, she's nothing special on screen.
Yet another character we're supposed to like but don't for some inexplicable reason?
No.
That's the single problem I have with Katherine Heigl is, for some reason, even though her character is someone you're supposed to like, she's never likable.
Yeah. Well, she's not like giving anybody a tug job on a Jumbotron screen like she did in The Ugly Truth, but...
Well, I mean, that was awesome. I kind of actually liked her at that particular moment.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway.
I don't know. This one, I was just like, I was so lukewarm with this. And you know, a lot of times in movies, like the supporting cast is better than the full cast. This one, the supporting cast is even worse. So I'm going to say this, you know, there is a certain sort of chick flick appeal to it, but I'm going to pretty much say it kind of sucks.
Fair enough. I hear the word on the street is that it's charming. So
charming.
There you go. Let's go to a break. And we're back here on Fat Guys at the Movies. Just in case you were not aware that we were coming back, this is segment two.
Yeah, I'm just so happy to not have to talk about life as we know it anymore.
Fair enough. You know, it's funny because from what I heard, I maybe talked to like three people who saw it. And,
well, that's a nice random. That's a nice scientific sample.
No, it's a pretty good swath. I mean, it's very much like the Nielsen ratings. You talk to three people and if they like it.
Extrapolate that to 10 million.
Yeah, if they like it, then you know you keep the show. If they don't like it, then you cancel it. Like My Generation got canceled.
What? No mention of Lone Star? Isn't that the one?
I guess whatever the one that everybody got mad about. Yeah. My Generation was one I heard most about because it was filmed in Austin.
Oh.
So a lot of people that I know were like out of the job now.
Dude, that is production.
But Lone Star, whatever, who cares?
Yeah, we'll talk about that on the other podcast about TV.
Whatever that other podcast is. Anyway, so, but I heard from some people who don't normally like movies with Katherine Heigl and Josh Duhamel in them that this was a rather charming film.
It has its moments, but...
You know, and I'm leaning towards believing them now that I hear your opinion, so there you go.
Of course.
Yeah. All right, time to move on to story about a horse.
That's right.
This one is Secretariat. It is the true story of one of the most famous race horses in the history of race horses.
Well, Mr. Lauren, what do you think?
I think he eats too much. He lays against the back of that starting gate like he's in the Caribbean.
Secretariat is not afraid, and neither am I.
Horse racing is unforgiving for housewives.
It's like every other multi-million dollar gamble we housewives make every day.
All right, then. Let's show them what you're made of.
Here's the thing with Secretariat.
It doesn't involve Maggie Gyllenhaal
no,
on a desk.
It's not a sequel to the S&M movie.
Damn.
I know. The problem with Secretariat is it's so hard to talk about this movie without spoiling.
Without spoiling the fact that the horse wins at the end? I think everybody knows that. That's just history.
Well, that's the thing. Well, not everybody knows it, but it's kind of like Miracle.
Oh, sorry.
It's kind of like Miracle, the movie... Miracle, what is it about? It's about the United States hockey team beating the Russians. That's what it's about. So when you get to the end, you know they're going to beat the Russians. You know?
Yeah, but the question is this. Miracle, if it accomplished anything, accomplished the recreation of the excitement around that moment.
That's true.
And it essentially accomplished the fact that even though you knew they were going to win, it was still very, very exciting.
Yeah.
So the does Secretariat do anything similar to that?
I think so. I mean, it's not as solid of a movie as Miracle, but it is good in the sense that it tells the drama behind it. It tells sort of the long shot that's going on with the movie with the horse, and just sort of how things play out. Even though you may know how things end, how things play out are a little bit surprising. And you know, it's well shot. It's a very well done movie. It gets a little bit heavy handed in the sense because the whole thing is it's takes place in the early 70s, and Diane Lane plays the owner of the horse, and she's just like putting all her eggs in one basket with this thing, and she's, you know, just hoping beyond hope and kind of like betting the farm quite literally on
the farm.
So we do have it goes a little bit heavy on those moments of her, I'm just doing this to survive, you know, that sort of Oscar speech moment. But I adore Diane Lane, and while I'm not wild about horse racing, it's a well done movie. I mean, it's a good movie. It fits well into the wheelhouse of that Disney inspirational sports movies, you know, movies like Remember the Titans or Miracle or that kind of thing. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks for that.
Okay. I did not see this movie, so...
Were you horsing around?
Oh, boy. I really wish I could punch you through the magical studio in the sky's window.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will allow you... No, face punching. I will allow you...
You're such a pansy.
Next time I see... Will you let me punch you in the face?
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, right. I'll tell you what. Next time I see you, physically I'm in your presence... I will allow you to hit me up on the side of the head with a fish.
If I see Secretariat?
No, did you see me? That's
just
that
in
is,
general.
This is my gift to you. Happy birthday.
That's a pretty good deal, actually.
But you have to get a fish.
Okay.
You hit me upside the head once.
Okay.
If you lose grip on the fish.
Can I wear gloves?
No.
Oh. That's kind of disappointing. Fish are hard to hold on to.
Well,
that's all right. I'll just get one that's not that slippery, and I'll beat you with it pretty hard.
No, you hit me once. You can't. Like,
yeah, no, it'll only.
You
take
can't
once.
Beat me seriously.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty strong with a fish. I'm gonna get a huge fish.
I can't wait. Next time I come to Texas, you'll be like, "Oh crap! I gotta go to the market."
I need to go to the fish market.
I need to get a flounder.
We have big fish down here, like a swordfish. I can hit you with a swordfish.
An entire swordfish? If you can pick up a shark and hit me with a shark, it has to be dead, though.
Fair enough.
Please do not hit me with a live shark. That would eat my face off. The key is, though, we can film it, and you can put it up on Film School Rejects, and we can put it on Fat Guys in the Movies.
I cannot wait to do this.
So if you
need to come to Texas.
Well, when are you coming back to Ohio? Because you got never. You got family.
Why would I want to come back to Ohio?
Because your mother lives here?
Ah, she comes to visit me. It's warmer here.
No,
it's about to get really cold there in Ohio. Who would ever want to go there?
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, no. No good.
We've killed enough time. Can we talk about Buried now?
Fair enough. Actually, I saw this next movie.
I know, that's the only reason it's on the list. Because it's not even opening in my neck of the woods this week.
Yeah, it's Buried, and it's Ryan Reynolds going underground for a movie.
Yes, 911.
I'm from Hastings, Michigan. I'm a driver for CRT. My convoy was ambushed. I'm buried in a coffin in the ground, and I need help. Please send help. I'm begging you.
How did you end up in the coffin, sir?
I was put here.
You're American?
Yeah.
$5 million money to 9 more to stay. Buried like dog.
United States Department, eh?
I'm an American citizen. My convoy was attacked, and I'm being held for ransom. I need $5 million, or I'll be left to die here. These threats are real, and will be followed through on.
Now, have you seen it yet?
No, it's not. It's not opening, or if it is opening, it's like opening in one theater. It's Lionsgate, and they do a terrible job limited. At screening stuff.
It's
Hello.
You know, a thing. Sorry, I had a yawn there for a second.
Oh, am I keeping you awake?
I was thinking about conversing with you, and the yawn took over. But here's the deal with Buried. It's a movie that I did not get a chance to see a second time at Fantastic Fest, though it did play, and it played pretty well. It seemed like everybody dug it, and I was very disappointed to see it make a lot of money. Oh, jeez. But I was very... very excited to see folks kind of getting into it, because it's a gimmick film. Let's face it. It's about a guy who gets buried alive, and it's told from the point of view of being inside the coffin with him. So a lot of it is this claustrophobia gimmick.
It's like My Dinner with Andre without Andre.
Sure. But it's very much, you know, a lot of it is very dark. There is at least 10 full minutes of the film that is pitch black, and the only thing that you're doing is hearing him. Actually, it's more than 10. It's probably a good 20 minutes.
Was this just to save money? They're just like, we ran out of film.
Well, I mean, they made it really cheap, but I'll tell you what, I can applaud the director Rodrigo Cortez for committing to staying inside the coffin, essentially. Mm-hmm. He keeps the camera inside the coffin the entire movie, until right at the very end, which I don't want to spoil.
Don't
anything.
Spoil anything, you idiot.
What? That's not a spoiler. You don't know what happens.
Okay.
But the entire story is told from inside the coffin, so piecing together what happened and, you know, any communication, you know, it's about this guy named Paul Conroy, who was a contractor in the Middle East, and he wakes up. The first shot of the movie is him waking up and finding himself in pitch black in a coffin, and he has to kind of piece together what happened to him. And it's really interesting because Ryan Reynolds is great in it. I thought it was one of his better just kind of character pieces, because, you know, it's the whole movie is him. Mm. So you get kind of the range of emotion, terror and confusion and the panic and then the calm and then more panic, and he really kind of delivers it very well. But like I said, I have to applaud the director for sticking to it.
Does he find really the green power ring that can light up the coffin for him?
And it really does.
You're just
really
ignoring me
feel
at this point.
Very claustrophobic. No, he doesn't find a green power ring. What stupid questions. I'm trying to be serious here for a second.
Geez.
But it's very claustrophobic. It's very atmospheric. It's a very cool movie. And I think it's worth seeing because it's different. It's very different, and it's different in a good way.
How long is it?
It's like 90 minutes.
Okay, so it's not like two and a half. It's not like something that just takes.
No, it's very brisk, and it flies by, but I enjoyed it. I think it's definitely worth seeking out if it's in your area, you know, just because you just don't see movies like this. So I say totally rocks. I give Buried totally rocks.
I've been looking forward to seeing it ever since I heard it making news at Sundance.
Yeah, at Sundance. That's where I saw it, at Sundance, and I'm gonna seek it out again when it opens up wide.
Awesome.
So. All right, break time. We'll be back.
Bye.
miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh, yeah.
Okay, and welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We had a very interesting discussion in the break about what Neil can and can't say on the air and whether we'd actually want to do what he says.
And the order in which you would do various actions.
Yeah. We don't need to share that.
I think we should move on.
I mean, we can say it here. Sure.
Nah,
but
I don't want to
hurt my our readers, our listeners.
Nah, my mom listens to this, everyone. I don't even think my mom listens to this anymore.
It's not even worth it. I want to start off with a listener voicemail. This is from Thomas from Seattle, longtime listener of Fat Guys. And the reason I kept this, I've had this for a couple of weeks because I want to get Neil to weigh in on this. So let's go ahead and play it.
Hey, Kevin, this is Thomas from Seattle. I recently saw Red Cliff, the international version, and I was wondering if you or Neil had seen the movie. I was very impressed. I kind of missed John Woo making good movies, and it was a really good John Woo movie. And also, I wanted to make the claim that Tony Leung is like the coolest actor alive and working today. And I was wondering if y'all had any comments on that. Again, Thomas from Seattle, and I'll talk to you soon, Kevin. Thanks.
Did you ever see Red Cliff? I don't know anything he's talking about.
I did not, though it is on my list of movies to go back and watch when I retire or something.
When you retire?
No, I keep this list of movies that it's like, hey, that'd be good to see, and then I never see them.
Yeah.
However, incidentally
why I love doing DVD reviews, because you get sent stuff that you like otherwise wouldn't see.
Yeah. However, this did get a rather positive review from Rob Hunter, whose opinion on Asian movies is to be trusted above all others. Yes. He reviewed it as part of his Foreign Objects column, which runs every Wednesday. And he gave it a B+. The only reason I haven't seen it is because it's one of those movies that...
Does it involve like schoolgirls getting raped by goats or something like that? Because I know he loves that stuff.
It's a feudal war epic. Oh. And apparently it's John Woo's kind of return to directing good movies. And
Post-Broken Arrow.
Post-Broken Arrow, I guess. Well, dude, Broken Arrow's awesome. He didn't do Broken Arrow. Face Off was the one he did. Broken Arrow was somebody else, wasn't it?
I'm pretty sure he did Broken Arrow.
Did he?
And was it Hard Target?
Well, Face Off.
Hard Target. Hard Target was his. Yeah, no, it was Hard Target. It was
Hard Boiled.
No, Hard
the
Target.
The killer, and Hard Boil. The Face Off and Paycheck. I know John Woo.
No.
Mission Impossible 2.
He did Hard Target. Okay, now I have to look it up since we're in the.
Oh yeah, we're definitely looking it up now.
All right, this is with Jean-Claude Van Damme, and it was his. It was Woo's...
Was his English language debut?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Hold on, I'm going to look it up, and I'm proving you wrong. Hard Target. It's Hard Something. It stars Jean-Claude Van Damme and that girl from that Witchblade show. Hard Target, directed by John Woo. Booyah! In your face!
What was the other one you said?
With a fish.
Oh, he did do Broken Arrow. Wow, I was totally wrong.
Boom! Double booyah! I have just beat you in the face!
So anyone who doesn't like the name Ain't It Cool News should not like John Woo, because that's where it came from. Okay.
So anyways, back to Red Cliff.
Red Cliff. Heard good things, but I guess there's a two-part edition of the DVD. Like, the one I want to see is there's like a four-hour version of this movie that I'm told is spectacularly long and... quite big, so you know, someday I'll see it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
that's
I've never been a big John Woo fan. I've seen which is the one? Is it The Killers, the one where they have the gun to each other's head?
Sure.
Or is that
I mean, I'm
hard
pretty
boring?
Sure he does that in a lot of movies.
He doesn't ever. Well, it's with Chow Yun-Fat, and they like
The Killer. It's called The Killer.
I think I've seen The Killer. I mean, his stuff's good. I actually prefer his. He's from Hong Kong, right?
Mm-hmm.
I prefer his Hong Kong stuff, just because it seems a little more. Now it just got too big budgety, and it was like you got to do all this cool stuff. Although I did like Mission Impossible 2.
He does have a lot of dubs in his movies.
Yeah. That's true. All right. The next, we have another listener voicemail to play, which is really fun because this can lead into the box office segment. This one is from somebody. I don't know who it is because he didn't leave his name. And it's he was complaining about my review of The Social Network.
Hey there, Kevin Carr. Is that your name? I read your tidbit review on The Social Network, and I just want to tell you, you're the reason why douchebags, people like you, you're a fucking douche, and you're not qualified at all to be a critic. So do me a favor, and everybody else a favor here at Rotten Tomatoes, and stop fucking typing on the page. You don't belong here. You're a piece of shit, and your opinion doesn't matter. A self-important, narcissistic glorification of its own significance? Really? Isn't that what every movie is, you dumbass? And I was checking you out there, and, dude, you're giving all these, like, fucking retarded-ass films decent ratings. So, just, I just want to tell you something. All right, you're a piece of shit, and I want you to stay the fuck off of Rotten Tomato, because you're a piece of shit, and you wear flannel. Fuck off.
Wow.
Do you agree with this man?
I'm not really sure. Here's what I gather from this. One, you wear flannel.
That's true.
Two.
I was in my George Lucas phase.
The flannel is actually true. Kevin wears flannel a lot. But
I don't know, I really don't. I wear fleece.
I gather that this guy did not appreciate your Social Network review.
No, he did not.
But I'm not really sure why. The problem is, and here's...
Because he doesn't say why, he says I'm just like a big douchebag and I'm full of shit.
Voicemailers out there in the world who are going to send hate mail or leave angry voicemails for shows like this, I would urge you to... give a reason why. This is things that we teach, first-time reviewers when they come to start writing film criticism. It's not about your opinion. It's about why. It's not about what you think. It's about why you think that. It's not about the movie being good or bad. It's about why the movie is good or bad. So, in this case, it's not about whether Kevin is right or wrong. Chances are he's wrong, but you need to focus on the why. Why is Kevin wrong? So I really would urge this person to call back. I doubt he listens to this show. It doesn't sound like
one really
of our
don't think he does.
Normalists. He actually sounds like an adult male. So anybody over 15 is not going to listen to our show. But I would urge you to call back and at least give us the reason why. You can add expletives if you feel that's necessary, but the reason why is the most important thing. Because now I'm curious. That's what's going to bother me about this whole situation is this guy's so angry, and, I mean, it just really sounds like he's really angry over one little blurb from Rotten Tomatoes. He is just hyper angry, and I have no idea why.
You know what's funny is when I was it would have been neat. I would have loved to have been watching myself when I listened to this because voicemail came in. I listened to it and I'm laughing through this minute and a half, and I'm listening. I'm chuckling, and then I'm just waiting. I'm like going, it's good. I was it didn't, but I was afraid it was going to get like really ugly at the end where it was going to be like, well, because he sounds drunk. He's like, yeah, well, you're a douchebag and you're stupid. I'm going to kill you and your whole family. You know, I was waiting for it to get to that level.
I'm coming for you, and I'm right outside.
Fortunately, I didn't. It didn't, but I was just waiting for it to get really ugly, but it didn't. It just kind of remained consistent.
Yeah,
and I do wear flannel, so I thought that was entertaining. So
yeah, I really just.
I'm amazed that people get that upset at a bad review.
I really just, God, I just don't know what to tell you.
Because I got some real negative feedback. I mean, and more so than
it comes with the territory of being so wrong so often.
Whatever, you're such an idiot. At least I see the movies. What do you think of The Social Network?
I have no idea.
Zing, boom.
Although I did talk to someone today at work, a friend, I will say, a female who is a friend.
Are you putting body parts in her body?
No, no.
Okay, just wanted to check. I'm just.
But I was asking.
I just need to check
everybody,
the playing field.
You know, at all of my various jobs where I work for money, everyone always wants to talk to me about movies. Yeah. I want to talk about show tunes, but they want to talk about movies.
Well, you know.
And so somebody came up to me, and one of my female coworkers, she's like, I saw The Social Network, and I was like, oh, that's great. What'd you think? You know, I haven't seen it. Let me, you know, tell me if I should go see it. I mean, full well knowing that I'm gonna go see it eventually either way.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, it was okay. It's really, really hard to watch because none of the characters are likable at all.
Yeah.
She's like, I hated everyone in that movie. And she's like, so there's nobody to root for. And I was like, all right, I get that. Because, you know, most people go to movies wanting a hero, wanting some sort of someone to root for, someone to root against.
It sounds like she had a similar opinion of me.
And I found that to be interesting because I'm familiar with the story behind The Social Network, the Mark Zuckerberg story. And I was like, yeah, that does make sense. In that situation, everyone is sort of a douchebag.
Yeah.
So there you go. Which, you know, interesting perspective from a commoner.
Yeah. Well, cool. Good to know.
There you go. So, speaking of which, that movie made $22 million last week, and thus begins our box office segment.
That's true. Made $22 million, which is good, but not huge and fantastic. I mean, I think that it's a modest success in terms of that. It's good for Fincher, because generally his movies don't open well at all. I mean, like, Benjamin Button did well.
He's no Zack Snyder.
No. Can I tell you that am I like one of the only people who's very excited about that announcement?
I'm excited about it. I think Zack Snyder makes awesome movies.
Everybody,
awesome in a very literal definition of the word awesome. They are awe-inspiring films.
I really enjoy. I have not yet seen a Zack Snyder movie I don't like.
Yeah,
going back to Dawn of the Dead, I really enjoyed that. And what's funny about that is every other name that was thrown out, like Darren Aronofsky, my butthole clenched so hard when I heard his name, because I'm just like, oh, that would be just a disaster.
Mm-hmm. It'd be a little more. And they really need somebody for Superman who's commercial but also slightly interesting. And Zack Snyder's proven himself to be both. I think the difference between a movie like 300, which was hyper-commercial, and a movie like Watchmen, which was just so painstakingly faithful to source material that the rest of the world did not give two shits about.
Well, and there was no way to make Watchmen.
Well, I mean, but he was so he was on the side of the comic nerd, but you know, then again, he's also made a remake of Dawn of the Dead that was just straight up, let's make some money, and 300, which was just like, let's use abs to make some money, and I think he'll be a good balance, because you have. You know, I really don't want someone to make a, you know, super faithful adaptation directly from one book and, you know, try and get the... I want somebody who will create something that's accessible, but also an interesting Superman movie, and I think he's a good shot at that. Plus, you got Christopher Nolan, who, if anything, as a producer, he'll help him get the tone right.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that sounds like an awesome combination to me. Yeah, I don't see why anyone would have a problem with it.
I was very jazzed about it simply because I'm like, he's somebody who would just make, he would make a kick-ass Superman film. And he's got
and
enough
who doesn't
want
to see Superman kicking ass in slow motion?
Well, and the whole thing is that, I mean, he's got enough of his style that it's recognizable, but his style fits in to the comic book format, as proved by 300 and Watchmen. You know, so it doesn't. It's not like when if you were to take like another director. I'm going to even throw this in because this is going to make you go. Well, no, hold on a second, Kevin. You know, if you were to throw Michael Bay into it, Michael Bay would make it such a Michael Bay movie that it would be less of a Superman movie, more of a Michael Bay
movie. Well, I don't think Michael Bay has the touch for Superman. Yeah. I don't think Michael Bay has a touch for such beloved characters. I think Transformers is about as beloved
about as
a character he'll be able to go. You know, Michael Bay makes very surface-level movies, which I love about him, and he cops to it and owns it and does it, but I think that there's a little bit more finesse to making a good Superman movie, just like there was a little bit more finesse to making a Batman movie. You have to treat it very seriously.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, the one thing that Bryan Singer got wrong is treating it as a comic movie, you know, and that was the same thing as Ang Lee as Hulk. They didn't treat it as a they didn't treat the characters as serious characters. They treated them as comic characters.
Well, and the other thing with Bryan Singer, his big flaw with Superman 2 or Superman Returns is he didn't know when to be faithful and when not to be, and it just like he just seemed conflicted through the whole movie and didn't know what he was doing from that level.
Right. So you know, hey, I'm all for a stylish, you know, tonally interesting Superman movie with. What's her name in it? Who's the girl that's going to star in it? Oh, Natalie Portman. They think Portman's going to be Lois Lane. That'd be cool. Yeah. She's a good actress. Although she's going to be in like every superhero movie ever. With her being in Thor. So they could totally get somebody else. Just not Kate Bosworth.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, speaking of Zack Snyder, you got Legend of the Guardians came in number 2.
Oh, yeah, that guy. See, he makes money.
Well, sort of. I mean, just under $11 million. This movie's not doing well, which is a shame because I think it's a really fantastic film. And I think what killed it, of all things, and what killed this movie, if you watch the trailer, you don't know a damn thing about this movie. Just like, it's about owls, and that is it. There's a story there.
It's a tough sell because it's a movie about owls.
Well, but he had a movie about fucking penguins, and it made like $500 million, you know? But the thing with the...
Fair enough.
But you watch... The Guardians, and the trailer doesn't tell you anything about the story, with the story where they're enslaved and they have to rise up and they have to find these guardians and stop these bad owls. I mean, there's actually a dramatic story there. It's just not represented at all in the trailers. It's just, look at owls flying and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. So, and then Wall Street came in just barely under that, and The Town, Easy A U again. Sadly, Case 39 and Let Me In both came in at 7 and 8 with just over $5 million.
It's really disappointing to see that with Let Me In as well, because... You know,
did you think it was
going to
do well?
I didn't think it was going to do very well. I'm still disappointed that it didn't do very well.
I wish it
would catch on. I did see it on opening night of Fantastic Fest, and I thought it was very, very well done. If the other adaptation, it's not a remake, it's another adaptation of the same book from Let the Right One In, and it actually adds some elements from the book that I found to be very interesting, like... You know, Elias Koteas, Casey Jones from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, if I may, is...
Yes, I'm impressed that you threw that in there.
plays a cop who is not in Let the Right One In, but it's a very interesting character that they add, and he plays it very well.
Yeah.
But, so, I really enjoyed it, and I liked it, and I was pulling for it. I really was hoping that people would get out and see it to maybe inspire them to watch the Swedish version. And then, furthermore, maybe read the book. You know, I'm told that you can actually still read books these days. But it's disappointing to see it not well done. Well, it proves that Matt Reeves, again, proves that Matt Reeves is a technically proficient director, and he gets story. He actually shows kind of a love for the source material, and you know, makes whether inadvertently or directly. Does a lot of shot-for-shot stuff from the original Swedish version, which I think should be appreciated rather than thinking of it being stolen, because he creates a great atmosphere around the film. So, you know, I really like Let Me In, and I thought, man, I hope people go see this movie, because there's a whole series of film and book that they could actually discover based on this.
Yeah.
But it was not to be, I guess.
Excuse me, I had to sneeze. The thing with... I look at this as kind of like the way I looked at Scott Pilgrim, in that if it's a good movie in its own right, but it's not something that's going to reach a wide audience. I mean, it's not... And forget Twilight kind of vampire angle. It's not even like a 30 Days a Night vampire thing. It's not a mainstream movie. It never was. And it's so close to the original. It's just with English language at this point for 90% of it, in the sense of that's the only difference. Although what's interesting is in one day, on its Friday box office, it did almost as much as Let the Right One In played in its entire run and domestically. So it technically was seen by more people. So, and then Case 39, I got to give a shout out to this. I was thinking this was going to suck ass, but I went and saw it, and I'm like, it was actually kind of a really good movie. Case 39.
Oh, sorry.
It really kind of brought back... It's the guy who did Pandorum. The guy who directed Pandorum. And it's a... it kind of has a 70s feel to it, if you like sort of 70s horror. I mean, it has the effects. There's a little bit of digital stuff going on, but otherwise you'd be like, well, this could have been made, you know, I mean, obviously the filmmaking techniques are beyond it, but it just had this feeling and sensibilities of something made, like, you know, in the mid-70s, which I really dug the feel, and it was a neat little movie. So fair sadly enough. That didn't do it. Another one that's interesting to talk about, coming in at 50...
50?
Was Hatchet... Was Hatchet 2. Interesting controversy about this one. I wanted to just kind of get your take on it. You've heard the whole controversy about Hatchet 2, I'm sure.
Yeah, right, I mean, there's articles about it and stuff.
It just disappeared from the theaters just one day. Poof,
well,
was gone.
And I know the story behind it.
Okay, what's the story?
The story behind it is that AMC... AMC was putting out an unrated version of it as kind of a, you know, support unrated horror and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And the theater chose to release it in their chain as a series of midnights to try to draw people in. And what happened is that 27 people per screen saw it on the first day.
Yeah.
And so they were like, well, never mind. And they just pulled it. They just yanked it. Yeah. So that is that's pretty much the whole story. It seems pretty cut and dry that they saw clearly that it wasn't going to do well, and they were like, eh, never mind. Because there was really no obligation. It wasn't a studio releasing it. It was a theater chain releasing it.
So there was no you're contracted to have this movie for 2 weeks or something.
Right,
like
yeah. Usually first-run movies get at least a week.
Yeah.
You know, and then theater chains can pull them if they're really not making any money. But this one was the theater chain's decision. It was a theater chain promotion. And that's all dollars and cents, people. So if you are disappointed that Hatchet 2 got pulled from theaters 2 days in, that's your fault. Yeah. That's not the theater. The theater chain is just reacting to the fact that no one went to see this movie because no one cares about Adam Green's movies.
Well, and here's the thing.
And that's
I hate
fine.
To
he makes, I'm sure he makes decent films, but, I mean, it's like... You know.
I hate to say that I agree with you, but Neil Miller, I agree with you. They literally could have put Scott Pilgrim in the theaters and made as much money, just shifted that print mm-hmm. over. And
yeah.
and
well, they
I've seen a lot of people blaming the MPAA, which I'm like, don't blame the MPAA. Adam Green went and he said, I'm making this movie. He was assuming it was going to DVD, and it got a theatrical, and he's like, it's never going to get an R rating, was his response.
Right.
So, and I thought it was a neat little experiment. But here's the other thing from the dollars and cents issue on this. It costs more money for an individual theater to have an unrated or NC-17 movie because they got to put somebody at the theater door all day. Mm-hmm. You know, and that person's got to check tickets and make sure they actually have stubs, because the last thing you need is somebody paying for a ticket, some 12-year-old kid paying for a ticket to go see Ramona and Beezus and sneaking into Hatchet 2, and then some angry parent call the theater and say, look, this is unrated. You say you do not allow it under 17 in, and then that theater's got a shitstorm of crap to deal with. So it's a business decision to just not have it. I saw Showgirls when I was in college. Back in 1993, my wife and I, when we were dating, we went and saw Showgirls. They had somebody posted outside that door, not letting anybody in unless they had the ticket. And that's money that they could have, that's somebody that they got to pay, whatever, $8 an hour to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got 27 people seeing the movie, you're barely even making, at that point, you're not even making a profit. You're actually losing money on that because... The amount of money you actually get from those tickets or concessions aren't even going to pay for the person outside the door.
Right. So you know, so I mean, I guess if you're one of those people who's up in arms about it, which there seem to be, it's the fact that not everyone is into unrated horror movies, you know? Yeah. Why not just buy them on DVD, I guess? Or come to Fantastic Fest.
Yeah.
If you come to Fantastic Fest next year in late September here in Austin, Texas, you'll see all of the craziest, weirdest, unhinged, unrated shit that you want in one place in 1 week. It's good enough to keep you through the whole year, and that's there's a place for people like that. It's just mainstream movie theaters, mainstream audiences just aren't into it, and it doesn't. I think it's this the internet generation is a self-importance issue. We feel like because I'm talking about it and all my friends are talking about it and all the websites that I read are talking about it. It's this very small community of people. We think that it's going to do well. Like, Let Me In is another good example. We're like, man, everybody's talking about this movie. It's all over the place. And it makes, like, $4 million.
Kick-Ass.
Right.
Scott Pilgrim, same thing.
And Hatchet 2 is even more niche. Grindhouse, I mean, there's an even smaller segment of people who know who Adam Green is, let alone want to see Hatchet 2 and or have seen Hatchet 1. And regardless of the film's quality, you know, it's never going to make a lot of money. And I think Adam Green knew it. But, I mean, he's a filmmaker. He's out there to make money. I'm sure AMC gave him a decent amount of money to do this little experiment. So, I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Try it, and then it didn't work. Yeah. And I don't think anybody's surprised, except for some reason, fans who are living in denial. So, everyone else was like, yeah, that pretty much figures. Unrated horror sequel to a movie that no one saw in the first place. Yeah, that's not going to do well. Yeah. So,
speaking of denial, what do you think is going to win the weekend?
I have no idea.
Do you think that Case 39 is going to rally from behind?
Let Me In is going to win. No, you know, it feels like this week, really, the only big release is that horror movie, the Wes Craven one, right?
No, Secretariat, My Life as We Know It, and My Soul to Take.
Are those wide? Are those all wide
releases? Yeah, Secretariat. Secretariat's going to win. That's my theory.
Life as We Know It feels like a strong bet for the top five. My Soul to Take isn't going to do any money, because I barely even heard of that, and I write about movies for a living.
Yeah.
And Secretariat sounds like it'll battle it out with The Social Network. I think Social Network's got a lot of good, it's got a lot of word of mouth. So
even if it has a scant, like, 35% drop-off, you're still talking only, like, what, 12 million for this? 12, 15 million for The Social Network?
I think Social Network will be in the mid-teens, and that'll be almost enough to win the weekend.
I think Secretariat's going to be right around 20 to, you know, in the 20 or low 20s. That's what I think it's going to do well.
We'll see, I guess. I'm not really sure that Disney's even putting a lot into that movie.
They're putting a shit ton of stuff. They've got tons of screenings. It's advertised everywhere. You just don't see it because it's not advertised The Social Network and Let Me In.
I don't know where. I don't. But that's the problem is I've been watching the things that I've been watching haven't been like my normal channels. I've been watching a lot of sports, you know, a lot of ABC, a lot of mainstream stuff, and I haven't seen anything for Secretariat.
Secretariat's pretty. It's pretty well out there. I would be surprised if that does not win the weekend. And that's not because I'm just a Disney whore. I mean, that's not my prediction.
Whatever.
So, oh my God, we're so late. We got to do your top Fat Guy 5.
Real quick, top 5. These are, we're speaking of Fantastic Fest, the place where you can see a bunch of craziness. There's 5 movies that I've selected as, not as the best of Fantastic Fest necessarily, but the 5 movies you should seek out from Fantastic Fest. And or the 5 reviews that you should read, because these are not only were they movies that some of them I didn't even see, but when we look at all the reviews from the guys at Film School Rejects who covered the crap out of this festival from inch to inch, we covered everything. These are the 5 reviews that you should read because they're the most passionately supportive reviews that you're going to read from. I mean, folks like Cole Tobias and Rob Hunter and Brian Salisbury are not known necessarily for their wild hyperbole, and there's some wild hyperbole being slung around in honor of these movies. So the first one is one that I did see. It's called Legend of the Fist. It stars Donnie Yen. It is a martial arts war epic, and the first 10 minutes of this movie is the most mind-blowing action sequence I have ever seen in a movie ever. It is unreal. Imagine, if you will, Saving Private Ryan, some of the more hectic scenes of Saving Private Ryan, with Donnie Yen running around killing Germans with no gun.
Wow.
It's, yeah, I know, speechless, right? Number 2 is Rubber, which was reviewed by, I believe Rob Hunter reviewed this one.
No.
And Rubber is a movie about a killer tire. And it's an awesome movie about a killer tire.
Wow.
So you should check that out. It was reviewed by Rob Hunter, yes. And the whole basis of this movie is that in life there is no reason, so why shouldn't there be a killer tire?
Sure.
The third movie is called The Sound of Noise, which is also reviewed by Rob Hunter. It is a movie about terrorists that use music.
Okay. It's about Barry Manilow.
Basically, but I have not seen it, and I really want to see it. Rubber, I'm going to watch this weekend. But The Sound of Noise is apparently this really interesting action movie about terrorists who use like a... What's that music, the musical scale that does the... It's not a palindrome. A palindrome's a type of grammatical thing.
Palindrome's backwards forward, yeah.
But the thing that wobbles back and forth so that you have the beat of the
music. A metronome?
A metronome. They use a metronome.
Jerome the metronome.
Yeah, that's stuff like that. So read the Sound of Noise review. Rob Hunter is very much in support of that. Another one called Golden Slumber, which if you saw from last year, a movie called Fish Story, it's made by this Korean director who makes these very interesting large-scale stories set very intimately. And this one is about a guy who gets framed for killing the prime minister, but the story is really about him trying to escape, but also about him reconnecting with people from his early in his life. And it is just one of those movies you walk out of it and you're like, this is why I love movies, because of stories like this and because of, you know, character driven stories like this and stuff that just really hits you on an emotional level. So no. Great movie, Golden Slumber. Yeah. And then the last one is The Last Circus, which was reviewed by Dr. Colobias. I don't know much of anything about this movie, but when he came out...
I thought you paused there. I thought, like, well, you're over. That's it.
That's pretty much it. But when he came out of this movie, he thought, it's just... it's an Alex de la Iglesia film. Have you ever heard of this guy?
No.
It's one of those just... It's one of those movies that makes you realize that you can... You're enjoying life. I think it's something like...
Did Dr. Colobias drop acid before
he said something? He said something about the director.
Ecstasy?
Said
he's like,
the director said that
movie.
He made this movie based on the kind of the idea that to enjoy life you must be a bad person. So we're all complicit in enjoying these things while bad things are happening around the world.
Wow.
And we're all.
This sounds way too intellectual for me. It's no surprise that.
But apparently it is also an incredibly beautiful film,
like
just
me?
On a surface level. So The Last Circus. So you should check out all of these reviews. Read the. I don't want to give too much away.
Go to Film School Rejects. That's your assignment.
From Fantastic Fest. They will knock your socks, especially Brian Salisbury's Legend of the Fist review. It's perhaps I have never sat in a movie before in the Alamo Drafthouse, and the Alamo Drafthouse is super, super. Hardcore about not talking during movies, but we were cheering through Legend of the Fist. We could not help. It was myself, Brian Salisbury, and Drew McWeeny from HitFix, and we could not help ourselves but cheer during Legend of the Fist. It was so awesome and impressive.
Wow.
If you've ever seen a Donnie Yen movie, then you know what I'm talking about. So
cool.
So there we go. That's my Fantastic Fest wrap up for.
Holy shit, we've been on for 30 minutes plus.
It is time to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap you up and get you out of here. And we are wrapping up here on Fat Guys at the Movies after that ginormous third segment. We thought we'd make it extra fat for you this week since I'm returning epically. If you did not hear it, if you're listening to us on the radio somewhere in the world, you should go back online and download us.
That's actually rare for us to suggest you do that. Usually we're like, you want to avoid that middle
right.
segment.
There was some pretty articulate statements being made by both of us. Actually, I'm going to give Kevin a little credit here.
Thank you.
We had a pretty astute conversation about things from Zack Snyder's Superman to Hatchet 2's limited release, super
extremely
limited
release.
Extremely limited, one night only release, to talking about Fantastic Fest and The Social Network, in which we did a lot of that. So, moving on along, we're going to do the world famous DVD roundup. Now, I'm going to go first. I've only got a couple here. Beauty and the Beast,
which
came out on Blu-ray.
Awesome.
Perhaps one of the more beautiful Disney movies I've seen on Blu-ray, especially the older Disney animation. And by older, I mean from the 90s.
Yeah, that was like 92.
but absolutely beautiful transfer on Blu-ray. The other thing I like about it, the way Disney releases their Blu-rays, is you get the Blu-ray, you get the DVD, and you get the digital copy. So you have, even if you don't have a Blu-ray player, you have it for the future. You have the DVD copy that you can watch now. and then you have the digital copy that you can take and put, you know, on your small devices. You know, a lot of folks have iPads and iPhones and all that stuff, and you can just throw it right on there and watch it.
It's also good. It's mobily. Also good if you've got kids, especially for a Disney release, and that's why a lot of the kids' movies did this is. They can then take this, they can watch it in the car, they can watch it in their room.
Yeah, exactly. Computer. You can put it on a computer and watch it there, illegally put it on the computer without having to, you know, have the FBI come knock on your door and ask you why you put Beauty and the Beast on your computer illegally. Next is The Human Centipede, which I would not recommend watching if it weren't for the fact that I feel everyone should be subjected to this movie.
You will see nothing like it previously.
Ever.
Now you'll see a ton of The Human Millipede.
Right. So
I'm sure the asylum is working on the human millipede at this very moment.
Awesome. It's midgets. The Human Centipede is perhaps one of the grossest movies ever, one of the grossest concepts. The execution isn't perfect, but the concept itself
is
disturbing beyond all things.
The villain is fantastic performance. It's worth seeing for his performance.
Then we also have, speaking of just awful movies, Troll 2.
On Blu-ray! Which
is one of the worst movies of all time. Worst movies ever, ever, ever. The subject of a wonderful documentary called Best Worst Movie, which you should seek out. And I'm sure we'll talk about it again when it comes out on DVD.
Little bit of trivia. There's no trolls in Troll 2. They're all goblins.
There are no trolls. It has nothing to do with Troll 1. Mm-hmm. And it's a really terrible movie with terrible effects. And it... You know, though, it's one of those movies that when you see it, you understand why there is kind of this weird cult following, because it's so bad. So bad. And now it's on Blu-ray, which doesn't make any sense, but you should pick it up anyway. Secret of Kells, which is perhaps one of the most visually stunning films of last year. It was the
surprise Oscar nominee.
The surprise Oscar nominee for Best Animated. It really did give Pixar kind of a run for the money, in my book. It's a wonderful story. It's a beautiful film, and it's worth renting at the very, very least. And then finally, you have Grindhouse, the two-disc Blu-ray edition, the version of Grindhouse that we've always been waiting for since 2007.
Since the early years of the show. Came out.
Yeah, so those of us who pushed that box office to 20 million on that first weekend. Now, this is finally the version that has both movies. It has really cool behind-the-scenes stuff, like the making of the Don't trailer that Edgar Wright did.
Don't.
And some very cool like stuff about all the trailers and the Grindhouse experience and stuff like that. So probably worth picking up if you've been waiting for it. I own Planet Terror. I don't own Death Proof. So I'll probably pick this up finally on Blu-ray, because I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for 3 years.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Next, those are my picks.
Nightmare on Elm Street is out. Also, not great, but hey, you know, if you like the slasher movie, Splice, which was one of my favorite movies of the year. I thought this was so fantastic.
One of the better original sci-fi slash horror movies.
Sort of like this cross between Alien and Species. It's one of the best horror films of the year. Didn't do any box office, but definitely go check it out. It's fantastic. There's also The Exorcist on Blu-ray. This is awesome. This is one of their Warner Brothers Blu-ray books that comes up with extra features and stuff like that. It's a great package. You've also got The Maltese Falcon and Treasure of Sierra Madre, Humphrey Bogart movies hitting Blu-ray for the first time. You got Last of the Mohicans, Blu-ray for the first time. Another great film that, you know, and it's epic. It's one of those epic things, good for Blu-ray. You got the RoboCop trilogy hitting Blu-ray.
Epic.
Which, the first one's epic, the next two, not so much. Space
RoboCop's awesome. You bite your tongue.
Well, the first one is 2 and 3. Space Chimps 2. Now, that one we can agree.
That's epic.
The biggest movie of the year. And then the Mad Max trilogy is on Blu-ray as well. There's a lot of great stuff. I mean, get your Christmas shopping done now. Mm-hmm. Boom. The Stinker of the Week, The Karate Kid, because that movie was stupid. Go see the original. Rent the original. It's on Netflix instant.
Okay.
So, anyways, review wrap-up. We got Life as We Know It, I said, kind of sucks. You Didn't See, My Soul to Take, Neither of Us Saw, Preemptive Suck. Secretariat, I said, it kind of rocks. It's definitely worth seeing. I think it's going to win the weekend. Buried, you said?
Totally rocks.
Boom. Next week, we got Jackass 3D and Red.
Woo, Bruce Willis. In the meantime, get us over at fatguysofthemovies.com. Go out and see some movies. Go out and see movies that you like, and take your friends and make them see
Don't go see movies you don't like.
just don't go see movies that we don't like. Go see Buried. Buried's good. Let Me In. Go see Let Me In. Go see all these movies. And when we come back next week, we'll talk about other movies.
Bye!